not afraid of the big bad wolf. A Good Omens multivoice podfic, written by Sordio Mazite and voiced by
Sky Asimaru
and Trap. Summary: Aziraphil wasn't pleased that he wasn't human anymore, and transforming into a werewolf was neither his idea nor the ideal scenario. But he was doing the best he could, even if he was far softer than his new pack would prefer. Then, of course, he met Crowley, and it all went to hell. A fluffy love story with more than a few toothy obstacles along the way. Chapter 1. Werewolf, their wolf. For something that he had been told ad nauseum was simple instinct and nothing complicated, and without pointless fripperies, Aziraphil was very humanly irritated that being introduced to a pack of werewolves took all bloody night. Apparently he had been a disappointing man, and now he was a worse werewolf, all because he preferred tea over tussling and poetry over posturing. The actual transformation, a horrific surprise earlier this week, wasn't precisely a walk in the park either. In any case, he was rather terribly mussed and untidy, riding the tube home to Soho and feeling rather woebegone. Usually, Aziraphil would meet this mood with some brandy and Bronte, but he could still feel the echoes of fur like an itch under his skin. Wuthering Heights was perhaps a bit on the nose, insofar as experiencing the dismal adoption he was now forced to accept. No one in his new pack had seemed to be in the mood for any tangible explanations either. Why were werewolves so tied to the moon phases? The full moon simply reflected sunlight, so why didn't they have a diurnal cycle instead? Where did the extra mass come from? Where did it go? How, against all known laws of barbershops, did his fur retract when he shifted back to human? Hair growing should be an extrusion-only business, as far as Aziraphil was concerned. Goodness, he was itchy. He was going to have a very hot bath when he got home, that was for certain. He also deserved bubbles, absolutely, and to order Chinese food to be delivered by humans who could answer simple questions like,
"What do I owe you?"
with actual information, instead of a lupine howl or cocky replies of,
"You owe us everything, sunshine."
He hadn't liked that at all. Unfortunately, he couldn't figure out anything to counter the pack leader, Gabriel, who had told Aziraphil he couldn't go back to his old life, not in any way that mattered. He still ached, and it hurt to breathe, long after dinner had been eaten and he was clean from his bath. One of the other werewolves, who seemed to be eternally beside Gabriel ready to obey, had lunged at Aziraphil when morning had come and the pack had shrieked and groaned their way into panting, naked human skins. Aziraphil had let out a very undignified noise when the fist had knocked the wind out of them. Apparently, most of the pack lived together in some kind of commune, with the leaders, such as Gabriel, Michael, and a few others, still living in human society, ostensibly to demonstrate their superiority over their natural human prey. Aziraphil privately thought that they just liked being able to take warm showers. Gabriel had chuckled at how Aziraphale was gasping for breath in the dirt, had derided him for being soft, all while pulling on a set of immaculate sweats from a designer duffel bag he had ready. So Aziraphale had learned several things this week. Humans and werewolves could both be hypocritical balance, and being a supernatural creature was more about being dirty yet arrogant rather than any supposed true oneness with nature. Nevertheless, he kept circling around that confident statement that, no matter what, he couldn't really go home again. Aziraphale sat in bed, the dawn sunshine glowing dimly through his curtains, his pillows fluffed, and his bookshop smelling of dust and stories, and felt the edges of sharp teeth in his mouth. No matter where he was, there he was. He wasn't human anymore. Aziraphale closed his book, curled over his bruised middle, and wept himself to sleep. When Aziraphale woke up in the early evening, he was clearer-minded, even if the oddly timed nap was out of character. He had obviously needed the rest. He was absolutely famished, so he obviously needed dinner, too. There were average calorie counts for activities like running and swimming. Aziraphale wondered vaguely what the energy expenditure per hour might be for transforming into a mythical creature. It was probably good for his cardiovascular health. He got himself dressed, with a bit more care than usual, although thankfully his tummy didn't hurt anymore, and walked outside. And the stench of London almost knocked him flat. He leaned against the bookshop door for a long stretch of minutes, keys loose in his hand where he had been locking up, and very slowly got himself under control. There was so much, it was dizzying. There were wisps of smoke, rotting garbage, perfumes and mud, and oil, and the salt from the brackish water of the Thames. The noise from so many people was dizzying as well, and he stood in the doorway for a very long time until he thought to put his handkerchief up to his nose. The smell of his cologne was something to hold on to, and he breathed deeply several times until he felt steady. He had to take breaks twice, but he got to one of his favorite cafes, managed to order and eat dinner, then walked straight home. He had a headache for the rest of the evening. The following morning, he pulled every book he owned about sensory issues, of which there were three. Once he had inhaled the contents, he gathered himself up and left the safe smells of the bookshop to go to St. James's Park. It was slightly fresher air. It was a nearby attainable goal, and anyway, he hadn't fed the ducks in a while. All of the books mentioned that it was far too easy to stay at home, and the long-term isolation wasn't good for human mental health. Good Lord, Aziraphale was going to have to actually socialize, wasn't he? Oh no. Well, if it meant perhaps staving off the inevitable admission to the Wolf's Pack's compound of communal furry living, so be it. He would be a bloody pillar of the community if he had to. Curses! Maybe being a part-time pillar of the community would be sufficient, so he would still have some quiet evenings to himself. The park was lovely, and she sat in the sunshine and tossed corn for the ducks. They were a bit more nervous around him than usual, and with a sinking feeling he wondered how they could tell he was more carnivorous than he used to be. Well, he would win them over soon enough. Ducks were willing to overlook all kinds of personal failings of those who brought them food. He heard the child well before the little one ran directly into his leg, then climbed up on the bench next to him.
Hi!
The little boy almost yelled.
How come you're feeding them corn? Can I feed them too? Kane, don't bother the nice man.
This might have sounded a bit sharp if the heavily pregnant woman, who was clearly his mother, wasn't actively gasping for breath. The late summer heat was invigorating her young son, but she was sweating and looked practically faint. Aziraphale bolted up, pushed the bag of corn into little Kine's hands, and met her before she stumbled. She hadn't been too far behind him, but she collapsed onto the bench with a groan of relief. It was one of the nicest benches in the park, Aziraphale had always thought. It was somewhat shaded and near enough to the water to be a bit cooler than elsewhere. He gave her his handkerchief and, after she had given permission, fetched them both some frozen goodies from the ice cream cart. After a few minutes teaching little Kine the best way to throw the corn so as to get a wide spread and feed as many ducks as possible, Aziraphale waved farewell to the little family. Young Eve had thanked him for the ice cream and for the bench, and she was looking far less red in the face, so he went home feeling like being a human was going to be a literal walk in the park. Of course, then, every single day of Aziraphale's life became incrementally stranger. Because why wouldn't that be the case? Aziraphale had never been particularly paternal or especially gregarious, although he liked to think he was friendly enough. But now it seemed as if every sentient being wanted to be near him. He had to switch the bookshop hours to be appointment only, which was actually very nice, and he should have done so ages ago. But he had people almost following him home ever since the first Soho Business Owners Association meeting he had attended. It was bizarre. He could exchange a bit of polite small talk, or even say nothing at all, and people would ask him to hold their babies, or simply sit down next to him with expressions of actual relief. He would get a seat at a restaurant, and by the time dessert had been served, he had people pushing tables together to join him, even in nicer establishments. The waitstaff would take their breaks with him, and he had always been flagrant with sending compliments back to the chef. But now the chefs would come out and actually shake his hand. It was lovely, but he had no idea why it was happening. So many of his new friends were so troubled or tired as well. He had to make a fair number of calls and make a large number of introductions to do what he could to set up likely couples or arrange for job interviews and such like. As a side note, there were large numbers of frightfully rude men in London these days. Even after gently informing them that the attractive person huddled behind Aziraphale was not interested in their amorous advances, He had been forced to stand up on several occasions and look them in the eye. Also oddly, albeit conveniently, that worked every time. Aziraphale would stand up, sometimes with a kind of tightness in his chest. He truly hated conflict, but needs must. And something about him would drain all the blood out of their faces. He wondered if they could detect that he wasn't quite what he seemed. He wondered if the people who flocked to him like storm-caught birds could detect the same. He was a rotten excuse for a werewolf, and disappointing as a man. But if he was in a new phase of his life of being a guardian, then there were certainly worse things to be. It wasn't particularly upsetting, and Aziraphale didn't mind especially, since he liked being helpful. But it was very odd indeed. There was another full moon, and Aziraphale took the tube out to the countryside in the late afternoon, where he had felt the need to run the first time, and where Gabriel's pack had found him. They had claimed they could sense him that first time, although that seemed like balderdash. The transformation was a bit easier each month, although he didn't enjoy the pack roughhousing. He had a much more difficult time the morning after, when he was brought to the pack compound for a post-moon meal of unseasoned meat, and casually introduced to the rest of the wolves. Just that, the wolves, who had been born that way, and who were apparently so pure that the rest of the pack had decided that they didn't need names. Only humans bothered with names, and they weren't human. Aziraphale was horrified. The wolves, all from the same litter apparently, seemed energetic enough, wearing loose tunics and chattering among themselves. He guessed they were perhaps in their mid-teens, although he had never been a good judge of age. Perhaps the werewolves around him thought of them as pure, but all he saw were deprived children. He ate his tasteless meal and made impressed noises when the leaders proudly showed the concrete and bare drywall that made up their compound. He noticed that the leaders left in shifts. One or two would always be present, although not always where Aziraphale saw. The others would drive off and later would reappear showered and shaved and well-dressed. There were constant discussions about how living rough and abstaining from human luxuries made them closer to their true nature, but Aziraphale had started to wonder. He had been trying very hard to keep an open mind about differing lifestyles, particularly for those with specific physical and mental needs, but the constant surveillance, repetition of philosophical credos, and rigid hierarchy all added up in Aziraphale's mind to something that was not a pack or a family in any way he understood. It was a cult. It was a cult he had no alternatives to. After all, Gabriel had been right, and his life had already changed substantially in only a few weeks. He couldn't go home again. Who could he talk to, and who would listen? Perhaps he was simply too set in his ways to understand how the pack worked, and perhaps it was all just fine, and he was the odd man out, as usual. Still, the nameless wolf children bothered him. Aziraphale rode the tube home, physically unhurt, but terribly sick in spirit. His originally empty train car was packed to the rafters by the time he reached his stop, and he had run out of his business cards and emptied his spare tin of biscuits. The hollow-eyed teenage runaway who had found him on the train held on to his hand, and the next few days were spent in letting them cry onto his shoulder, setting up the spare room above the bookshop, and then finding them somewhere more long-term. They assured him that they would keep in touch, and he also assured them that he was only a call away from putting the fear of God into anyone who troubled them. It was all getting rather ridiculous. It was so easy to help people, and honestly, most of them needed so very little. Perhaps people just didn't know. He started writing to various public officials. The letters didn't do much, but he was irritated enough about some public service budget cuts to show up to a town hall meeting. When it came time for questions, he stood up and raised his voice just a little. The council person went chalk white. The budget was amended. Aziraphale went home and kept the bookshop shut for 3 days, despite the hopeful taps at the door. He was so very tired, and now there was an additional worry that he was somehow unduly influencing people. What if he became some kind of tyrant? What if he was now some kind of proto-bestial burgeoning despot? It was quite distressing. What if he did the wrong thing? That was when Anthony J. Crowley walked into his life. To be continued in Chapter 2.